You know, when we study the book of Genesis, it's a certain type of age, if you will, of men following God. And we look at that age as being the patriarchal age. And when you think of these patriarchs, the first one that comes to mind is a man by the name of Noah, a man of faith. We look at Noah and we consider him to be the father of the nation of Israel. He's the father of all that God has promised to mankind. And we read about him beginning at the end of chapter 11 there. And we begin reading more about him intently in chapter 12 in the first few verses where God makes those three promises to him. One of those promises is it involves a son. Well, Noah and Sarah did not have a son, but God promised him a son, and we read about the next patriarch, Isaac. The Bible calls him the son of promise. It was through this child that Abraham and Sarah had that this great nation would begin, and it's through him. You'll remember that God tested Abraham's faith, as is predicted or portrayed here in this image, where the angel came and stopped Abraham, preventing him from offering Isaac up as a sacrifice. But that's what God instructed Abraham to do, if you'll remember the story. This patriarchal age continued into Isaac's children, and we know about Jacob. Jacob is the father of the 12 tribes of Israel. And it's through him, and you know, it goes along with what we talked about this morning. In all three of the lives of these patriarchs, God's chosen people, there was turmoil in their families. So even as righteous men of days of old, their families had turmoil in them. But I want you tonight to consider the next patriarch in this lineage of people. I want to talk about Joseph. You'll remember Joseph, that he was the one that was sold by his brothers into slavery. And it's interesting, you look at the three before him, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and yet Joseph is the one that has more written about him in the book of Genesis than even the father of the promises to all of Christianity, more than the father of the son of promise, and more than the father of the 12 tribes of Israel. Joseph has more to say, God has more to say about Joseph in the book of Genesis than any other patriarch, more than Noah, more than Adam and Eve. More space is devoted to this young man in his life than any other. There's not a single word when you read about Joseph of where God says, "Joseph, I'm disappointed." There's not many others that God has ever let go without reprimanding them. God never reproved Joseph. He never admonished him and told him, said, "You did wrong." Abraham did wrong. He lied to Abimelech, remember? That Sarah is not my wife, she's my sister, because he was afraid Abimelech would kill him. Isaac, look at his life. Look at Jacob and Esau. Jacob was not the eldest son. He was not the one to receive the promise, and yet he betrayed his father. He deceived him and receive the inheritance. Really, the character of Joseph is probably worthy of a more careful study because of his nobility of character, his purity of heart and life, the fact that he became what he was even though his brothers treated him the way that they did. His character is probably of more importance for us to study than some of the others. We need to make him, more than any other Old Testament character, our study. An illustration of that type of what Christ was to give to the world in his perfection. So I want us to review the life of Joseph and be reminded of just how wonderful his character was as it was displayed being the man of God that he was. So we're going to start in Genesis chapter 37 tonight. And we're not going to do a word-by-word, chapter-by-chapter study, but we're going to do a survey of Joseph and his life. So if you want to open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 37, that's where we'll begin. At this point, Joseph is a son of Canaan. He's living there with his father and his brothers. And he is hated. His brothers hate him. Now, you want to talk about a perfect family. This was not a perfect family. His brothers hated him. They despised their youngest brother. And it probably didn't help that in verse 2 of chapter 37, he was a tattletale. He told on his brothers, and you know how siblings are. If someone tattles, then the rest of the siblings really don't like it. And it didn't help either that in verses 3 and 4 that his father showed favoritism to Joseph. That can tear a family apart as easy as any other sin. And then as you continue on in verses 5 through 11 there of chapter 37, it didn't help when he had these dreams and he came to his brothers and father and told them these dreams about the sheaves bowing down and the moon and the stars bowing down. And Joseph is implying to them that y'all gonna bow down to me. And here he is, the baby, and they're all telling him basically, you are crazy. Who do you think you are to tell your brothers this, and let alone tell your father this, that you're going to bow down to all of us? Well, that seemed to be the straw to break the camel's back. The brothers are out tending to the sheep. And the father sends Joseph out to check on them. And they look and they see that sorry, two-timing, tattletaling brother coming to check on them. The hatred just seems to boil over. And they want to kill him. Have you ever... Your family's not that dysfunctional, are they? Sometimes I thought mine was growing up, but I don't think it was. But, you know, when you're on the receiving end of some of this family feud, you kind of wonder. But here you have... In verses 21 and 22, the brothers eventually sold him as a slave, beginning in verse 12, rather. In verses 21 and 22 of that section, you see that initially he's spared by Reuben, and he intended to go back and free him. Remember, they put him in a pit. They took that coat of many colors off of him, and they cut it up, and they dipped it in blood, and they went back and told their father he's been killed. Boy, here we go with this dysfunctional family again. You hate your brother that you want to kill him, but the older, wiser brothers, they prevail and they say, let's not kill him, but we'll make money off of him, make him a slave, and we'll tell old Pops back home that an animal got him. So he spared death by Reuben, and who intended to free him, and then spared death by Judah, who's made the suggestion in verses 26 and 27, well, let's sell him into slavery, and we'll make some money off of him. You know what's interesting in all of this about Joseph? I think he could perceive the hatefulness from his brothers. How could he not? They flat out told him. But in all of this, he remained faithful to his father. You know, sometimes I think children rebel against their parents because they are working in conjunction with their siblings to pose a problem in the family. You know, Disney made money off of movies like this called The Parent Trap, remember? Two twins, how they plotted against the parents and future parents. You ever watch The Sound of Music? We started watching it last night. Briley and Curtis spent the night. And you'll remember the Von Trapp family had seven children. The mother was deceased, and the father was looking for nannies to take care of the children and raise them. And when the convent sent Sister Maria out to take care of the children, her first question is, what's wrong with the kids? Because they'd gone through like 12 nannies. And I know that's not the word they used in the movie, but that's the word that comes to my mind. So they get to the house. She gets to the house, and Captain Von Trapp is introducing her to all the children, and he says, you're the next in succession of all these women that have come to tend my children, and the last one only stayed here 2 hours. So Sister Maria says, well, what's wrong with the kids? You see, there's no perfect family.
But in all of this, some children seem to want to rebel against their parents to win approval from their brothers and sisters. But yet in all of this, Joseph remained faithful to his father, willing to obey his wishes. You ever told your children to do something? They go, nope. Just the littlest thing. Like Curtis today, his mama told him, said, sit down. I said, what'd you say? You don't talk to your mama that way. Yes, ma'am. But Joseph wasn't that way. He was willing to obey his father. In fact, his father in chapter 37 and verse 13 says, are not your brothers feeding the flock in Shechem? Come, I will send to them. And Joseph didn't say, well, no, I don't want to do that. I want to sit here and look pretty in my coat of many colors. Joseph said, here I am. The simple things of obedience. But you know, when you look at the life of Joseph, somebody might say, well, you know, to be treated that way and to be followed by the separation from your country and your family, surely that produced bitterness in Joseph's life. I mean, here he is, a young man, hated so much by his brothers that he sold into slavery. They lied to daddy back home and said he got killed, so they sold him into slavery. About 12, 13 years old, I guess, he becomes a slave because your brothers hate you that much. And yet the character of Joseph from this point on really begins to shine. Because when he gets into this caravan, these nomads that are traveling and buying slaves and selling them, the first place they go to is Egypt. And Joseph is a slave in Egypt, beginning in chapter 39. We see here that he becomes a slave in Potiphar's household, but God blesses him. And he's blessed here in verses 1 through 6 of 39. And we see that Joseph finds favor in Potiphar's eyes. So Potiphar was evidently well off. He was well to do. He had money. He was affluent, as they say. And even though Joseph was a young man, a few years must have passed, he proved himself to be a worker. He proved himself to be somebody that could be trusted because Potiphar put him over his household. And you know what? Joseph is still a slave. He's still a young man that's been separated from not only the land of Canaan, his home, but he's separated from his family, from his father. But he made the best of the situation. And God continued to bless him. And as a byproduct, Potiphar was blessed because he took care of Joseph. But you understand in this text that Joseph must have been a handsome fellow, beginning in verse 6 there of chapter 39. Because Potiphar's wife kept coming to him and making advances. She wanted him to lie with her. She wanted him to go to the bedroom and have her way with him. The text tells us that she tried to seduce him not only once, but several times. And here Joseph is, as a young man whose character is being tested. And he resists. He resisted her. I mean, we talked about this in a Bible study this week. Here he is. He's a young man away from home. And you've got, I assume she was a pretty woman. I'm assuming, okay? She's making advances at him. How many young men do you know that would be away from home like that and think, well, nobody will know? And here I am, a young man, and an older woman finds me attractive and wants me to go to bed with her. And how many young men would reject that, resist her? But he resisted, but the text tells us in verses 8 and 9 of chapter 39 that it was out of faithfulness to God and Potiphar. This is a testimony to the character of Joseph. You know, one of the biggest things that parents often worry about is when they send their children out. Maybe it's on a band trip. Maybe it's whatever. And you worry about what's going to happen to my baby when I send them out. Will they act in a proper way, especially if they're Christians. I had a discussion several years ago with a young man that was a Christian, and I don't know anything about him since then, but he was wanting to join the military. And I told him, I said, the military is a great thing. I said, but I'm going to tell you firsthand, it's a tough place for a person to be a Christian in basic training, especially. Because once you start giving those young men, 18, 17, 18, 19, 20 years old, some free rein and allowing them to do what they want to do, they head to the PX. And they start drinking. And they start buying pornographic magazines, and they take them back, and they slip them under their mattress and hope a drill sergeant don't find them when they come back. But anytime they have this downtime, they're looking at that material sitting in the floor, because you couldn't sit on the bed without messing it up. Ain't that right, David? They're sitting in the corners, and they're looking at pornography. And I told this young man, I said, you can join the military. I said, but it's going to be tough. They're away from home for the first time. And the first thing that a lot of young men want to do is to see how far they can go and get away with things. But she continued to basically assault Joseph. And he kept rejecting her. And this made her mad. And in turn, she accused Joseph of just what she was doing. And guess who got mad then? Her husband. So Potiphar put Joseph in prison. So you might think, here he is again. Things just don't seem to be going Joseph's way, but his character never changes. As he's in prison now, he becomes an overseer in this prison. Again, even in prison, God has blessed him. And Joseph, if you remember the text in chapter 39, he finds favor in the prison keeper's eyes. And this man puts Joseph in charge of the other prisoners. And the text implies complete trust. So Joseph, even though he's a prisoner in Pharaoh's prison, prospers in this new role. And those who were with him prosper as well. But you remember the story. While he's in prison, there he begins to interpret dreams. But Joseph is forgotten. With all the good that he's doing, he just doesn't seem to be able to get to the next level. In chapter 40 through chapter 41, you remember that he interpreted the dreams for the baker and the butler. And he acknowledged in verse 8 there of chapter 40 that it's not me that's telling these dreams. It's not me that's giving you what these dreams mean, but it's God. He's just telling me what to tell you. And we see there in verses 20 through 23 that these dreams come to fruition. They are fulfilled. And yet Joseph is still forgotten. And then Pharaoh begins to have dreams. And Joseph is remembered. Oh, yeah, King Pharaoh, listen, there's this guy that's in your prisons, and he told me my dream, and it came true. He interpreted my dream, and here I am today. Again, Joseph comes to interpret Pharaoh's dreams in chapter 41, and he doesn't take credit for it. Again, he acknowledges that it's God who is providing the answer. And in verses 33 through 36, we see that he offers advice about these dreams and their fulfillment. Now, again, we're going to stop for just a second and consider Joseph's life. Falsely accused. Then forgotten by the men he's helped. And again, we might wonder, why be righteous? Why even put the effort in if the people that I help in my life are going to forget me? But Joseph maintained his integrity, his character. And it doesn't matter if man forgets us, God does not. Joseph was never forgotten by God. Whatever station he found himself in life, God blessed him with whatever endeavor he had. Just as he found favor in the eyes of Potiphar, the keeper of the prison, now he's going to enjoy favor in the eyes of Pharaoh. Remember, he's just a small shepherd boy from Canaan, sold by his hateful, spiteful brothers into slavery. Then he's a slave in Egypt in Potiphar's house. Then he goes back to prison. And now look where he's at. He becomes a prince in Egypt. And when you look at the life of Joseph, he was wise in his service to Pharaoh. Now, at this point, he was about the age of 30, and Pharaoh appointed him as ruler over all of the land. The text tells us that the only person that Joseph had to answer to was Pharaoh. He didn't answer to anybody else. Again, God blesses Joseph. His wisdom is seen in the way that he is an administrator in the land of Egypt. In chapter 41, verses 47 through 49, we see that as he interpreted Pharaoh's dreams about the lean cows and the fat cows, he tells Pharaoh that there's a famine coming, but you're going to have years of plenty before that happens. Pharaoh puts him in the position to administrate over this to make sure that nobody really suffers and the land of Egypt doesn't suffer. So Joseph shows foresight in the years of plenty in verses 47 through 49. And then after the good years, during the years of the famine, we're seeing how shrewd of a businessman he is. He sells the grain, and when they run out of their money, he swaps grain for their livestock. And when they run out of livestock, he begins to swap grain for their property. And in return, he makes Pharaoh a very wealthy man, as well as the nation of Egypt. But in all of this, he is mindful of the fact that God has continued to bless him. Chapter 41, verses 50 through 52. But you know, the famine didn't just attack Egypt. It didn't just happen in Egypt. You remember the story, don't you? It also affected the land of Canaan. You remember who lived back there, don't you? Who's still there? The famine was there, and the father told Joseph's brothers, "You need to go to Egypt. I've heard there's grain there. You go there and you buy some grain." So they go. At 30 years old, Joseph basically has the portrayal of an Egyptian. That's what he looks like. He's still the man of God, but he looks like an Egyptian. His brothers come to him, and the text tells us that he treated his brothers with mercy. Chapter 42, we see through 45 that he is finally reunited with his brothers and fathers, his father. And in chapter 46, we see that he even made arrangements for them to come to Egypt, to the land of plenty, and to live there. He was in such good standing with Pharaoh that Pharaoh said, "Bring them on. If they're anything like you, Joseph," yeah, really. "If they're anything like you, Joseph, bring them on." So he brings them down to the land of Egypt, and they're given the best land in the land of Egypt. They're given the land of Goshen. Now, part of that is done because they're shepherds, and the Egyptians, yeah, that's taboo to them. So they separated themselves, which was also a good thing to separate God's people from the people of the world. But Joseph continued to believe in God. And he had to reassure his brothers that he had forgiven them. Now, if you had taken your youngest brother, taken the father's coat off of him and dipped it in blood and ripped it to shreds and lied about him being dead and then sold him into slavery, would you believe that he had forgiven you? And yet Joseph says, "There's no worries. I have forgiven you." When he first revealed himself to them in verses 4 through 8 of chapter 45, "I have forgiven you." And then when his father comes down in Genesis 50, verses 15 through 21, "I have forgiven you." Even when their father Jacob died, they were terrified that the only thing keeping him from exacting revenge upon them was their father. But I forgive you. Why? Why was Joseph so easy to forgive those that had wronged him and he had every right to exact his revenge upon them? He could have said, Pharaoh, let me tell you, I'm going to get them in here and we're going to wipe them out because of what they did to me. If he had told Pharaoh what his brothers had done, what do you think Pharaoh would have had in mind to do with them? Entomb them? Throw some scarabs in their casket or whatever they call it? You know, like you see in the movies, the bad people are buried alive with scarabs in there to eat their flesh. I don't know. But here Joseph keeps telling his brothers, I forgive you. And he tells them why. He believed in the providence of God. He believed that it didn't matter how bad things got. It didn't matter how bad people treated you, that good things can come out of evil intentions. In fact, in Genesis chapter 50 and verse 20, he says, you intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. God put me here to save you. I can't get revenge on you. I've got to believe that God put me here to save the nation of Israel. Think about it. This is all part of God's plan, is it not? The nation of Israel, because of this famine, is going into the land of Egypt, to the best part of the land of Egypt, and they're going to grow from about 70 people to over, what, 2-3 million by the time the Exodus takes place? And they're all there under the watchful eye of God. He believes in the providence of God, that God would keep His promises that He's made to His people. We see that in chapter 50, verses 24 and 25. Joseph said to his brothers, I am dying, but God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land to the land which He swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You see, that's another point. Joseph believed God's promise. God made a promise to Abraham, remember, chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. When Abraham died and Isaac became the patriarch, God reaffirmed that promise to him. When Isaac died and Jacob took over the inheritance, became the next patriarch, God reaffirmed that promise to him. And Joseph believed that, and he's telling his brothers, God's going to do what He has sworn to do. Then Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry my bones from here. Think about Joseph's life. In the life of Joseph, we see the value of character. We see a man throughout every aspect of his life, every point, every age, he had a life that was centered in faith and trust in God. You can't find a place in the writings about Joseph that he was not devoted to serving God and man with both honor and dependability. Remember what he told Potiphar's wife? I can't betray your husband's trust or the trust that my God has in me. And he was unwilling to be stopped because of hatred, because of betrayal, and because of being forgotten by others. Look at his life. He had the life where his brothers hated him. He had the life where he was betrayed by his brothers and forgotten by those people in prison. Remember the baker and the butler, until they needed him. Let me ask you a question. You ever feel like you're living Joseph's life? Now, I'm not saying your family hates you. Maybe they do. I don't know. Are you going through these spells in your life to where you think everybody's out to get you? We need to have the character of Joseph and be like Joseph and be able to see the big picture and be willing to forgive people when they wrong us. Like I said, we need to be able to see the big picture because God's wonderful workings are in the affairs of all of men. But you know, There's no more nobler character than we can read about in Joseph. In every season of his life, he was noble. When he was a young man, tempted by Potiphar's wife, and tried with no help from any family or friends, just sent to prison. No questions asked, because my wife says, you did this to her, you're going to prison. Then as he began to mature, as a mature individual, we see that he's put in charge with some very important responsibilities. And then even later in life, as an aged person, we see that even though when he knew that death was imminent, he still remained faithful to God. That ought to describe us in every phase, every aspect of our life. So I pray that the character of Joseph will serve to inspire each and every one of us to develop our character as well. That in some small way we can be like what Paul told Timothy in chapter 4 of the first letter in verse 12. Do not let anyone look down on you because you are young, but set an example for the believers in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, and in purity. Now, like I say, I hope this lesson can help you. I know I need these lessons. I know I need to strive to do better. And in all of these things, we need to look at the character of Joseph. You know, as Paul addressed Timothy here, he says, don't let anyone look down on you because you're young. Don't let anybody look down upon you at whatever age you are in life. You be the person that God would have you to be. So let me ask you tonight, are you the person that God would have you to be? If you're here tonight and you've never put Christ on in baptism, then you're not the person that God would have you to be. You need to become an obedient child of God tonight, before this day ends. But it may be that you've done that, that you wear the title Christian, the name Christian, but you're not living the kind of life that God would have you live. Are you showing a godly character as a Christian? If not, this is an opportunity for you to make that right in your life. We need to make any wrongs right when we have the opportunity, and you have the opportunity right now. Make your way to the front while we stand and while we sing. Thank you.